Welcome to Triad.
Thanks, Saul.
We have Nils Lofgren with us today. What's going on?
Not too much, just checking out my hometown.
This is your hometown?
Yeah, I was born here in 1951. I lived here for about almost 10 years.
Right.
Then my family split to around Washington, D.C.
Whereabouts?
In Washington?
Or right here.
Well, out on the south side, but actually it was really close to Midway, not too far from Midway. It was, let me see. I was just last night, I was visiting some relatives up at like 115th in Campbell, South Campbell. It's about 45 minutes from here.
Yeah. When did you start getting into music?
Well, actually, when I was a kid here in Chicago, the most popular instrument, it was weird. I was living on a block, at least in the South Side, big city blocks with houses just all the way around. And I was living on a block where there was, we used to count, me and my buddies, there was like 28 guys and there were two chicks, young girls. And so, all the guys, we were always hanging out and all of them started playing accordion. I usually hung out with kids just a couple years older than me. And when I was, I guess it was just like, 5 years old, almost turned six, I started playing accordion. So that's really when I started music. And I studied classical accordion until I was 15, almost 10 years. And, of course, when I was around 9 or 10, my family moved to, around Washington, D.C. in Maryland, in a suburb of Maryland. And about 15, I started, picking up on the Beatles. And actually, the Beatles were the first, they're the first popular music I'd ever heard. Like, I heard of everything literally before the Beatles I heard of after, I got into pop music. To me, it was sort of like, I was young, I was naive. I didn't understand the emotion and, friends would try to turn me on to, some rock and roll. And to me, I just looked at it musically and it was too simple. I didn't respect it. The Beatles, as classical of a musician I was and as close-minded, the Beatles just, they just did it. They rung a bell and they were really creative musically, I thought. And, I started, within a year, I quit taking accordion lessons. Actually, after 10 years of lessons, if you're a good musician, you should, I sort of exhausted it anyway. And, I started playing guitar, which was, to me, at first, it was like a hobby, sort of, it was a release. My younger brother started playing it. And, like, accordion, like I say, I was taking lessons, and it was classical. So I'd enter contests where, like, I'd study 6 months for two tunes, And, I was really, it was a lot of pressure. To be honest, it was actually more pressure for my age, relatively speaking, when I was 13 or 14, than rock and roll is, even professionally. Because, rock and roll to me, it's like, it was almost a joke at first. It's like you play guitar and you improvise. You just sort of play what you feel. And, I never experienced that before. I mean, I've always played how I felt, but I was interpreting notes that were on paper. There was no two ways to do it. You could feel it from two different places, maybe, but you couldn't play it two different ways. So when I started playing lead guitar and started getting pretty good at it, it was sort of like almost a kick, like the local guys would ask me to jam, and I just mess around, and I didn't have to do anything except what I felt like. And it turned me on so much that, I just, by the time I was about 17, I just knew that, that's where I was at, and I ran away from school, dropped out of high school. I was in my senior year anyway. And just, started putting Grin together, which was the first band that, rock and roll band that at least, tried to be professional and make records.
How did you get together with Neil Young?
Well, Neil was, he just quit the Springfield. Shortly after that I met him, he was with Crazy Horse. And this was his first tour with Crazy Horse. They were a band called the Rockets originally. And he'd seen them in Los Angeles in a little club. And hired, most of them at least, broke up the band and hired the best of them. And they were playing at a little club in Washington called the Cellar Door. And I basically had never heard of Neil Young except for, like, Buffalo Springfield, just their hit singles. And I went down to check him out and just asked, I was frustrated, musician in Washington, didn't know what to do or where to go. I just knew I wanted to do something and go somewhere. And he was really a nice cat. And he asked, finally after just, trying to politely pester him, if you will, just because I wanted to know what was happening. He asked me to play some tunes. I played a few of my songs and from my first album with Grin. And he really, took a liking to my material. He asked me to come back. And after about 3 days, he said, listen, if you can make it out west when I get back off this tour, and, you know, I'll try to help you out. I mean, no promises, but he was really just, you know, outwardly trying to help any way he could. He, you know, respected what I was doing, and especially for my age, you know, it sort of turned him on.
How old were you then?
Let's say I was 17 then. Uh-huh. And it really knocked me out that he took that interest. What it amounted to, I went out west when and I met up with him out there. And all it really was, he turned me on to David Briggs, who, you know, his producer, who's produced all the Grin albums and, you know, produced most of Neil's albums. And David, like right about that time, Neil was, you know, CSNY were starting to hit on him. Well, CSNN at the time, I guess. And, you know, he was really starting to take off. So originally he wanted to, like, form his own label maybe and have me be one of the first artists. And him and David were going to co-produce, you know, my album. But he was so busy, you know, doing his thing that I just, David Briggs, who's, you know, really fantastic guy, you know, had me move into his home, fed me, took care of me for like literally 2 or 3 years. I mean, on every level, you know, I was penniless, and just patiently worked with me until I got enough songs together to, you know, make the Grin album, which, you know, actually wasn't. I lived with David for 2 or 3 years, but we made the album after maybe a year because we went around to the companies and they didn't really, they were worried that, you know, since I'd never been in a studio, what if I couldn't work together with David? So finally we just borrowed the money from a friend of David's and we made the first Grin album with no record company. That way, you know, you go in and the product's there. It's like, right. You either like it or you don't, you know. And so, you know, after that, I just, you know, that's mainly how it started. It's, you know, Neil introducing me to David. And David really put a lot of time and energy into getting me at least to my first point of having a record deal with Columbia. Voila.
You also played with Neil on his After the Gold Rush album.
Yeah, it was actually, it's sort of interesting. The first record I made was the Grin. But when we were finished with it, it was a year and a half before it came out because it took that long to find a good manager, which I still have to this day. He's the one who got me the deal with Columbia. And in that year and a half, that's when I did After the Gold Rush with Neil in the Crazy Horse album when Danny was alive, Witten, with Jack Nitzsche. And that was a great band, you know. After the Gold Rush was sort of a surprise to me that Neil wanted me to play piano for him because I never played piano. But he just knew my background. He knew that from the accordion I knew enough to pick it up. And I guess he felt, you know, like I was musical enough to do it, you know. So after that, Crazy Horse asked me to join their band because they wanted to make an album without Neil, you know. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to stop working with Neil. They just wanted to establish themselves, which I thought was a smart idea because, to me, Danny Witten has always been, you know, one of the major influences, not so much of me or anybody in particular, but I mean he was doing something real special, you know, way back when, so it was right that he step out, and that's what Crazy Horse was all about.
So how long did you spend with them?
Well, after the Gold Rush actually only took about it took 4 or 5 days to make. It was, but I spent about a month with Neil. We first of all we played with a lot of different people just trying to find, you know, the right combination. And he had nothing, you know, he hadn't promised anybody anything. He was just checking it all out. And finally, you know, one day Ralphie, the drummer of Crazy Horse, Ralph Molina, and Greg Reeves, you know, who was playing bass for CSNY, CSNN, whatever it was then, came out to the house, and it was just, you know, at least for the songs that Neil had written, it really was magic, you know. Like, it was real quick, it was simple. And now that I look at it, I really understand a lot more why Neil wanted me to play piano, because, you know, if he'd hired somebody great, you know, like, I mean, like Nicky Hopkins or Leon Russell, it's almost like to do that album right, he would have had to tell him, I mean, almost don't play anything, you know. Whereas for me, I'd never touched a piano. I'd never played one. So working my best to be, like, as creative and busy as possible, I still was playing just, you know, simple enough for Neil, yet I was really into it. So I think now I understand more why, you know, he thought it would work, and he was right. And, like I said, that was about a month, and, you know, we actually, in 4 days, recorded all the tracks, but we rehearsed and practiced and hung out and jammed a lot. And then, you know, a couple months after that, it was, you know, Crazy Horse then, who decided they wanted to make an album without Neil. And they really wanted me to join the band, which really flattered me, you know, but I was, you know, I hadn't given up on Grin yet, and I was young, you know, I was still real loyal to my trip. I didn't want to give it up. So I made the album, and then I went back with Grin. I never really joined Crazy Horse. I just, as a friend, you know, agreed to make the album with him. And So for the, maybe I'd say that was like 2 or 3 month period with Crazy Horse, and it was more of a not so much like with Neil. I was more or less part of the band. You know, I wrote some songs, I did some singing, you know, mostly background, but I was able to participate, in other words, as a lead guitar player in the group, which admittedly I feel much more comfortable doing than playing any instrument I can play.
What's your favorite instrument then?
No question about it. I mean, as far as the instrument, I mean, just because I play it, I'm so prejudiced. I would have to say I think piano is the most self-sustained instrument. I mean, if I had to be, you know, I mean, locked up in a room for 10 hours. I mean, I don't know. I guess, like, if I, you know, either one, it'd be a hard decision to make. I love piano. It's a beautiful instrument. And like I say, I feel like it's the most self-contained instrument because you got 10 different notes, like a trumpet or something. I mean, you need accompaniment to get off. You can't, you know, sit there playing one note after another and that's it. But I'm definitely more comfortable on guitar than anything, you know. I'd be willing to pick it up and, you know, play it with anybody. Piano, I like to spend time working on my parts because I don't play it that often.
What kind of band do you have together now?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with it, there's an album, the bootleg album that A&M released.
Live album.
Yeah, right, yeah. The live one. And it was never released for sale or anything, it was just sent out as a sort of a gift to certain people. And, you know, that album there was well, it's the same band that's on that album that I'm playing live with. I use different musicians in the studio just because, like, to me, that's what being a solo artist is about. You know, if you're just going to play with three cats for a year or two, then you should be in a band with them, you know, and they should be, you know, taking the same responsibility as you are. And, you know, the band that's on the bootleg album is the same band I'm with now, with the addition of one member. There's my brother Tommy's on guitar and piano. I mean, organ, mostly plays organ and guitar. And we have a new member, Bobby Manriquez, who's a good friend of mine that plays lead guitar. He's a great guitar player. And then Mike Zach and Scotty Ball are the bass and drummer, you know, that were on the bootleg. They're still with me now. So it's basically that same band. And it's, I think the music is, it's very much like the albums. I just think it's better. You know, it's live. It's, mm-hmm. it's, it has much more of a fresh, urgent thing to it. You know, to be honest, I prefer, despite the hassle of travel, I prefer performing live to recording records anytime, you know. But I like to do both.
Your latest album is produced by Al Kooper.
Right. In a, like, there are like...
How did you get together with him?
Well, I was planning, and as I did anyway, I knew that there are a few things that I really wanted to do with David Briggs. And there are on this, you know, Cry Tough, really, you know, he produced almost half of it. And Al, I never knew Al. I always respected him as a musician and all that. But when I first started touring as a solo artist, I played in New York at the Bottom Line. And Al flew in and introduced himself. And, you know, apparently he'd been listening, you know, to my guitar playing for 3 or 4 years. And he'd always, he really felt strongly that there was something he could do and add as a producer that I hadn't shown yet. And he just was almost, without being a pest, he was, you know, pestering me. He kept calling me, he kept telling me, listen, you know. So finally, you know, of course, you know, being scared to just say, okay, well, let's do a whole album together. I mean, you know, it's my life and all that. I just said, well, if, you know, if you want to do it so bad, could we just try a couple things? Because, you know, Al's a big producer. You know, he's got the name, and right. he just usually produces like that, just they don't, you know, try out, you know. It's like, but it wasn't like, it was a mutual thing, you know. He understood my position and why I couldn't just, you know, put all faith in him after never working with him and not knowing him as a person, because that has a lot to do with it too, you know, where the people are at that I work with. I'm affected by that. But he convinced me, you know, by pestering me, and, you know, he gave me enough reasons to want to say, well, let's try a few things. And we went in, and, you know, obviously instead of just having three songs, I mean, in case something happened good, I had a few more. And between, you know, Jim Gordon, who to me is, you know, one of the finest musicians I've ever played with. I mean, it's a real joy to play with a drummer like that. It was really a great session. You know, it went smooth, and Al added a kind of, you know, just he has a flair for production and, you know, big extravagant kind of things. And I mean, you know, he could really run wild with it. But for my music, which is sort of serious, you know, he just added the right amount. And I think it was a good contrast between David's stuff, which is sort of like my natural instinct, real simple and raw and, you know, no frills. And I think, you know, if done right, you know, there's room for frills. Not all my music, though, see. So I thought it was a nice combination of the two. I thought maybe, in other words, I think if the whole album had been produced by just Al or maybe just by David, I don't think it would be as good a record as it is. I think, you know, the contrast allows for, you know, for it to be as good as it is.
Plan to do more work with him?
Well, I know, I mean, I definitely plan on, you know, for sure, you know, in the future doing some more work with David. It's like, you know, we're a lot closer, you know, as friends, I think, than we are, you know, professionally. I mean, we get along great and we have a good time in the studio, but, you know, like I said, David's great at a certain kind of rock and roll that I love, but, you know, I'm even sort of, I don't want to say more 70s, but in other words, I'm here now doing what I'm doing now, and I'm affected by it. So I see room for, like, some, not extravagant, but, you know, tasty production that's more than just simple four-piece. And so, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, not only will I work with David again, but I'd like to work with other producers, too. You know, that's, to me, is what being a solo artist is about. You know, it's just, you know, exploiting yourself. I mean, just getting better by, you know, having really talented people influence you, just like playing with Jim Gordon or Ainsley Dunbar. I mean, you know, those to me are the two best drummers I've ever worked with, and it was just a real thrill. You know, when you play with people like that, you've never met them, it's just, you're really on top of it. It's not like you're playing with cats you grew up with and you don't care if someday you feel like being on the rag, and you know, you got to be on top of it all the time. So, you know, it's a great opportunity. I think I'd like to work with other producers, but I know that, you know, I'll be working with David again. As far as Al goes, I enjoyed working with Al, and I thought he, you know, really contributed a lot. I never lived with him for a long time. We're not dear close friends, but, you know, he's a nice cat, and I'm, like I say, with no definite plans, I wouldn't rule out working with Al again either. It's just right now for my next album, it's just up in the air. You know, while I'm on the road, I can't really make those decisions. I have to wait. I guess in about a couple of weeks, I'll go out west and start getting that end of it together, you know, recording and setting up schedules and all that.
You have tunes ready?
No, I wouldn't go that far. But I have basic ideas. It's sort of like I write in cycles, which is not the best idea. I mean, I like to do a little writing every day. But, like, you know, when I'm in five different cities in five different days, I wind up wanting to relax a little bit after a show. I mean, it doesn't feel right to rush back to my room and start, you know, working some more. I mean, I want to relax and calm down. So I've got a lot of musical ideas, which I always have, like, not too many of, but I've always had a surplus of music, you know, just because that's where I'm coming from. Lyrically, you know, I mean, I'm definitely no Bob Dylan. I never will be. I'm not a philosopher, so lyrics come harder to me, you know, and I work harder at them. So right now I've got a lot of rough ideas or song titles in my head or tentative, you know, bits and fragments that just I know are going to come together. And it's just a long process. I've started doing that now, and probably in a month they'll start matching up, you know, and probably by this fall I'll have a handful of good songs I hope to go back in and put down.
Plan to do any songs by other artists? Other writers?
Yeah,
you do For Your Love on this one.
Yeah, right. And my first album I did, Going Back, by Carole King and Jerry Goffin. It's not a rule or anything. It's just I enjoy doing other people's tunes when I think I can do something legitimate to it. There are a couple tunes that I'm thinking of doing for my next album that I did not write. And without telling you the title, not to be rude or anything, just because it's something that I think, in other words, is a great song, and I got a fantastic idea of how to do a good version of it without just, you know, duplicating the original. But there's a Rolling Stones song, which I want to tell you about, that I'm really hot about attempting to put on the next album, you know. I mean, like I say, if I can do something legitimate that I'm proud of, I'll probably, you know, do a Rolling Stones tune on my next album, a Jagger Richards composition. But, you know, unless I can do something special to it, I would never do it just, you know, for the sake of doing it. You can do things like that at home, you know.
Right.
Rehearse with the band. I mean, if you want to play Jumpin' Jack Flash, you can do it. To put it on your album, you know, it's got to be something different.
What kind of music do you like to listen to?
Well, I enjoy all kinds of music, but to be honest, the only kind of music I really listen to for any length is rock and roll. But by that, I mean, I'm taking a very broad classification. In other words, Jimi Hendrix, you know, the Beatles, That's who I grew up with, and Rolling Stones, and Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin. That singer, the singer from Free, Paul Rodgers, yeah. who's now in Bad Company. I love the way he sings, you know. Rod Stewart. I like everybody that's really good, especially Stones, Beatles, Jimi Hendrix. I listen, you know, I'll hear bits and pieces of everything, but those are the people I really pay most attention to for inspiration alone, you know.
You get much of a chance to listen to music as much as you'd like to.
Well, you know, so I don't even have, like, I had a place of my own that I got rid of about 2-3 years ago, and I've been living in hotels ever since, and I crash with my mom and dad sometimes on the East, and usually I spend most of my time in L.A. when I'm not on the road, just working or staying with my manager, and in other words, I don't own a record player. So what I do, I have a portable cassette, you know, one of those Sonys.
Yeah.
And I travel with a lot of cassettes. Like, I'll go home for a few days and I'll just, you know, borrow, I mean, use my parents' system and maybe make a cassette of, like, you know, 10 or 20 different artists, just my favorite cuts in a row, just to whip on. So I listen to music quite a bit in my hotel room. But, you know, like, it's just, you know, homemade cassettes. Of,
yeah.
Like, sort of like to me, I dig it. It's like a, you know, radio station with no commercials, you know, instead of just one artist, you know, I dig having,
right. you
know, making your own running order, so to speak.
Kind of plans do you have for the future?
The future, well, right now I'm just totally into performing live. I think in the first week of next month, first week of August, I'm going to take about 3 or 4 weeks off from, you know, performing and go out west, do a little writing, and like I say, maybe just start mapping out, you know, what the next album is going to be, or getting an idea or a concept, start thinking about that, and also just, you know, taking a break and just getting in real good shape, and probably September I'll just go right back out on the road for hopefully another month or two. I mean, I just love playing live. I don't like the travel and all that, but I love playing live much more than anything, and I'd like to do it as much as I can before I make my next album. Like, by late fall, I should start recording, just because I want to take my time, and I don't want to, you know, put it off. I mean, I enjoy it, and I just want to wait until I'm really, like, you know, playing on the road really gets you in good shape, you know. You can't, you don't, your voice is not the same if you're at home, you know, just messing around once in a while. Every night to be in front of people and having to sing your best for like an hour and a half, I mean, builds up. You do that for a few months and, you know, my voice is stronger than it's ever been now. But like, if I took 2 months off tomorrow, I mean, you know, in 2 months, I mean, I would really be out of shape and I'd have to, you know, work back up. And that's what I want to avoid. So I'm hoping to go out to California just for a few weeks and do some writing and keep my voice in shape and go right back out on the road.